originally we said we were going to do JavaScript today. Now it seemed to me that you were diligently learning all these new languages, or many of you new language Java, and now was not the time to start yet another language, namely JavaScript, especially as your homework this week is Java. So I decided that we would postpone the JavaScript lectures by 1 or 2 days, depending on how things go. And what I'll do instead is give you a talk which explains how Java can be used in various applications. So this is a talk on the applications of Java. So this will not teach you any nifty new languages, because you're meant to be diligently absorbing the last set. All right. So this particular talk, which you should, has everybody got one of these handouts? All right. So this particular talk, which the handouts are available over there, does not cover all possible applications of Java. Rather, it focuses on two areas of particular relevance, at MPAC or at universities, namely, one application is for a general language for coding scientific and engineering applications. That's what CSE is meant to stand for, Computational Science and Engineering. And there is also some remarks at the end, which I won't cover in great detail, on the applications to education. All right, so one area that we will address, which is of general importance, is why Java has a lot of advantages over other languages, namely why it sort of seems to be a good compromise between C++ and Fortran, in that it has some of the advantages of both languages and some disadvantages which these other two languages have. All right, so this particular file, which you don't actually have, is a link that you'll find when this goes up on the web, you'll see this as a link. So this is a reasonably useful link which is available through the MPAC homepage as well as here, which is a collection of web resources describing the use of Java in scientific and engineering computation. So in particular, we had a conference in Syracuse, and these are the proceedings of this conference, and you'll see here a whole bunch of articles which people wrote on the use of Java in science and engineering, many of these actually from Syracuse. Probably shouldn't have clicked that one. This shows the interest in the field. We had a conference in December. ACM is now organizing a similar conference in June, focusing on the same area, just following up on that field. So that's clearly a lot of interest in that. All right, so this particular foil is actually one I've used in different forms many times. So this is the computing pyramid, although this is a computing triangle, and you will see computing cones in other parts of my foils. So the idea of a computing pyramid is that if you look at computers, the There's a huge number of very cheap computers, which are typified by PCs, or if you want to be exotic, by video game controllers and personal digital assistants and digital set-top boxes. And at the top of the pyramid, you have so-called supercomputers, which are the very large-scale machines, such as the large IBM SP2 at Cornell and similar machines at Pittsburgh and Illinois and San Diego, plus a bunch of other. I mean, there are some 200 so-called supercomputers around the world, typically from Cray, IBM, and Silicon Graphics. Now, so at the bottom you have a lot of not very powerful computers, and at the top you have a few powerful computers. Some useful numbers are that if you look at the how many dollars are going into the various fields, you will find that about 100 times as much money is spent on PCs and stuff like that as is spent on supercomputers. I mean, the computer industry is about $100 billion, plus or minus a factor of two, and the supercomputer industry is $1 billion, plus or minus a factor of two. The other number that's worth bearing in mind, which is that if you look at the total compute power of all these little computers, it's about 1,000 times the compute power of the world's fastest supercomputer. So this is quite important for understanding why Java is important, because Java, if you like, is the computing language of the bottom of the pyramid. It's the language which has been designed to support the machines at the bottom. So one of the fundamental reasons why the web and Java is very important is that it is supporting this huge number of machines, and it is supported by a computer industry which has enormous size. And because it has enormous size, the cost of a piece of software is much cheaper for a PC than it is for a supercomputer. That's if they have the same functionality. It's also relatively clear that if the number of sales in a field is 100, the sales in another field, you can afford to hire more people in the low end than you can at the high end. So at the end of this class, you'll all be very well prepared to have a job in this very large computer industry at the bottom. Even if you were prepared to have a job in the top end, there aren't quite as many jobs because the field is 100 times smaller. This particular foil, when you go to the web, has a link attached to it, which is a reasonably up-to-date article I just wrote about a month ago, which summarizes this situation. It's in HTML, so you can browse it, and you will find a link to it when you go to the website for these foils. This actually projects this whole scenario through to the year 2007, because in the year 2007, the top supercomputers will have performances around a so-called petaop or petaflop. A flop is a floating point operation, an op is an operation. Peta means 10 to the 15th, so that's 10 to the 15th operations per second. If you think ahead to the year 2007 and sum up all the PCs around the world, then you can easily convince yourself that the total power of that inverted commas computer is 10 to the 18th operations per second. Now, that doesn't say that you should ignore these machines going at 10 to the 15th operations because they're closely coordinated, and work on the same problem. And if these machines at the bottom are busily delivering digital video to everybody's homes, that may not be a very useful application which generates a great value from them working together. But there is it's meant to illustrate the huge potential that is possible just because of the power of all these machines. Because as I think I mentioned in the first lecture, every consumer device is effectively having the same chip technology in it. Workstations and PCs are consolidating in their technology. PCs and video games are consolidating. SGI is making the microprocessors used in Nintendo's video game controller, and so on. So everything is the same technology. The only difference is, in a high-end computer, you package a lot of them together. In the very smallest system, which is currently a video game system, probably is the smallest real system, you have a single scaled-down chip. So this particular foil here essentially makes this point, namely it actually focuses on so-called MPP software, which is the top of the pyramid. But if you go halfway down the pyramid, when you find mainframes and corporate information systems, what this says is that the web software has to be the cheapest solution because it has the largest market. This particular foil was aimed at the parallel computing community, which is the area that MPAC works on when it is not working in web technology. And one of the very important reasons why the web is important, you see, these arguments were always true. Namely, if I'd made these arguments 5 years ago, I would have said PC software is the world's cheapest software. In fact, that's what Bill Gates would have said. Now, the trouble about PC software is PC software doesn't extrapolate very well because a single PC is not the same as a mainframe. However, as all powerful computers are all now built from the same technology, and the way you get a more powerful computer is by building it in parallel with lots of PC chips, the web is relevant because the web is a distributed computing technology. It is a technology that is not the software for a single machine. It is the software for a network collection of machines. And that effectively is a general computer. So the difference today is not just that the web is a wonderful thing, but the web computing model is the general computing model. Therefore, you can use web software effectively to tackle an arbitrary problem, whereas the PC software was very interesting and very productive, but it was only aimed at PCs, and PCs could not be properly extrapolated to other machines. But I believe web software can be extrapolated to other machines because the web is a general linked collection of computers. So here we have a computing cone, and this arrow, which appears on various of my diagrams, is meant to point out that whenever we're building any software, this argument tells us to start at the bottom and project up. You start with the software of the web. If you go halfway up this cone, you build corporate intranet out of that software model. If you go to the end, you build massively parallel computers, the software for them out of this technology. This is a foil I've used many times. So this describes the basic mechanism for web technology. So at the top, You start with the world wide, and that's the so-called internet, which is implementing the web worldwide. You start with the world as the consumer, and that gives you, by definition, the world's best software because it has the biggest market. And that's just a law of economics, that if you have the largest market, you can, of course, make cheaper software, but as you have such a big market, you can also make better software because you can hire more people to work on it. So this is sort of the origin of this generates browsers and servers, or navigators and servers. Then it is, of course, true that if you look at particular applications such as banking or military applications, they would require special enhancements like security, so you add those in. And then this gives you your base software system, and then you apply it in various applications. And in applying it in various applications, you do two things. The original model was general software for general networks. When you apply it to a particular application, you choose a specific network. That gives you a so-called intranet. An intranet is just a restricted network servicing a particular geographical domain. And so a good example, this particular foil is discussing medical applications. And so a hospital and the associated doctors and clinics might have a particular high-speed secure network linking them together. So you take the software which was designed for the worldwide net and you apply it on that Pacific net. So that has some important advantages because the Pacific net can be faster and also more secure than the worldwide net. But still you want to take the software from the worldwide because it's better. And then of course you also customize the software. So your database search, so if you go to the web today and you type search, you have all these wonderful things, Yahoo and Lycos and AltaVista and Excite and what have you, your web search technology. You then change that web search technology instead of to search the world, you now change it to a very highly customized search of a patient record database or whatever is deemed to be important for this application. When you do a corporate enterprise information system, it searches the database describing the corporation. So we do two things when we use web technology, in particular Java. We restrict the hardware, and we customize the software. And so that means that we shouldn't be worried too much. The issues of security and issues of performance, which are present on the internet, may not be relevant on our specific application. If we have a high-speed, customized ATM network internal to our organization, doesn't matter. That can have much higher performance than a bunch of phone lines or whatever the typical user on the World Wide Web has. So when you're looking at web technology, you should bear in mind your application area because it may have different characteristics from the application which is the World Wide Web. So now I make some, this is actually a few general remarks. So why will Java replace many languages? Well, it will replace many languages for a combination of social and technical reasons. So the technical reason really two-part. I've described one technical reason, which is that it's used pervasively on the web, which means it has this huge capital investment in it. The other technical reason, which we'll explore later on, is that it actually is a pretty good language. Namely, it is a language which appears to have a good trade-off between performance and functionality, so that you seem to be able to get a lot of the functionality of traditional languages without significant performance losses. The one language which I think it is relatively clear that they can replace is Fortran, because it appears that you can build Java compilers. You can't today, but you will very soon be able to build Java compilers, as we'll discuss, which are the same performance as Fortran compilers. And there is little doubt that it is a more powerful language than Fortran. Something which is a little less clear is whether it will replace C++. The reason for that is that C++ is a more powerful language, if you like, than Java, because Java does not have pointers, C++ does. C++ has extensive overloading capability that Java doesn't. So many people view those as big advantages of Java, because this is what allows you to actually build high-performance compilers and also to build safer software. However, it certainly reduces the functionality of Java. So I would say that it's not known whether Java replaces C++. I mean, one reason to think it might, even though it doesn't have this functionality, is that it appears likely that future applications are going to have to be, if you like, web-aware. They're going to have to run on the web. And if they're going to have to run on the web, they'll probably be naturally written, at least partly, in Java. And so there'd have to be a very compelling reason to go into C++. Today, that compelling reason exists because C++ is not only more powerful, it is higher performance today. If you write a C++ application, it will run a great deal faster than your Java application. But that will not be true in the future. In the future, your Java application will run faster than your C++ application. I think there's no doubt that's true. All right, so if you focus on this next section, we're discussing how to use Java, you know, what is the role of Java as a computing language. I isolated three types of use of Java as a computing language. One is to build user interfaces. The second is to build what I call coarse-grained software integration, which is linking globally units of computation together. And the second and the final use of Java as a computing language is to actually do the nitty-gritty of the inner kernels or essentially your basic code. So these are sort of the three types of uses of Java. And now we'll describe those separately. I guess this particular foil here is meant to illustrate these roles. So here we have the user staring at his orange client. So there he has a user interface. The purpose of this diagram is to emphasize that the software for user interfaces runs on client computers, not on server computers. That's what a user interface is. So that's likely to be a low-end machine, almost by definition. So it's going to be a PC or a workstation. Then I had a bunch of components of the application: rendering, control, database, and detailed computation. And so the linkage of those four components is an example of the using Java to link components together. That is probably the least controversial use of Java. User interfaces is uncontroversial. Linking components together is pretty uncontroversial, because that's a very natural web type of thing to do, because in the web already you have a bunch of independent servers, and the web tends to link those servers together. And then the most controversial is to take a particular unit of that computation and then use Java as the language to implement, you know, your favorite computational fluid dynamics or your favorite geographical information system or whatever your particular simulation or computation is. But I believe there's reasons you will expect Java to be used in all three of those cases. So I've already mentioned Web Windows, and the reason I put Web Windows here is that if you look at Java as a user interface, the reason, if you like, why Java is the natural user interface language is the Web Windows philosophy, namely, the software will be built to the interface defined by web browsers and clients. And so if you believe that, then the computing language which you're going to use to build to those interfaces is going to be Java by definition, essentially, because it is the computing language for the web. So I probably can make a parenthesis here. You're learning Java because it is the dominant language of the web. There are various people like Microsoft or AT&T who would prefer that you use a different solution. And it is possible that such a different solution will become popular and replace Java. If that happens, it will have to be, I think, better than Java. So any remarks I make about Java will be valid for the replacement, because the replacement will still be the language of the web, which is the largest market, because there is no way you can replace this technology unless it is the technology of the web. And in spite of Bill Gates' enormous power over everybody, I do not believe that he can force a technically inferior product on us. In fact, I think his products have to be significantly better before people will accept them, because Microsoft has such a negative image as being a giant bully. I believe Microsoft's power is actually negative in this respect. But that positive for them is they have more people than anybody else by at least a factor of 10, so it's quite likely they'll invent some pretty good technology. All right, so that's the end of the parenthesis, which says that when I say Java, I mean the language of the web, which is currently Java. Many people expect it to remain Java because Java was very well designed. It is not a fad, as far as I can see. I have not found anybody perceptive, I think, who would claim Java is a bad technology forced on us by Sun. It is forced on us by Sun, but it is good technology. And so the reason for its success is that it was excellently designed, and it had these positive features about it in terms of its application domain. All right, so I think there is little doubt that, as it says here, and I've already mentioned this, that Web Windows will be the operating system of the future. It may not be called Web Windows, but effectively it is Web Windows. And in fact, all the projects you're doing are effectively Web Windows projects. So when you build a JDBC database, you're using the web client / server interface for databases, as opposed to the BMS or the PC or the Macintosh interface. This foil here just makes the obvious remark that Web Windows is both the operating system of all the web, but also it is the operating system of a single PC, or a single Macintosh, or a single video game controller, because you can run a web server and a web client on a single machine, and that is all you need to have Web Windows. So whether it's distributed, clients talking to servers not on a different machine, whether it's a single standalone PC, in your study, it's still a universal operating system. So Web Windows is the operating system from one machine to the hundreds of millions of machines which are on the internet.